So Rose finds herself looking for the Matnoi Saniyim, looking for the Leket Shikhen Peya, the various parts of the produce that are left for the poor, in Boaz's field. This is the divine coincidence that we saw last week, that Hashem bought her. She's looking around just for a place where she can collect kernels, and Hashem brings her to the field of Boaz. Boaz appears, and he takes note of her. How did he take note of her? As the Mefarshim point out, it certainly wasn't Boaz's way to be checking out, especially since there were crowds. It was a very busy time in his field, and there were many workers in the field, and there were also many people collecting the kernels. But she stood out. She stood out in terms of her conscientiousness. As we discussed last week, she stood out both in terms of the Mefarshim say, her chachma and her tznius. We saw that she was being extremely meticulous about what you're allowed to take and what you're not allowed to take, which was unusual. Usually, the people would just come and whatever they would take, they weren't so exacting. And number two, he noted her tznius, which really manifested itself in especially dignified behavior. She didn't join the whole just head over heels rush for the kernels. She kind of, as we actually saw last week, she stuck to the leket, which was the less popular matani. Had to look all around the field instead of going to the places where there was concentrated grain in order not to be a part of the whole crowd. And she would bend very carefully. So ironically, Dafka, in her tznius and her refined behavior, that is what made her stand out. He took note. He asked about her. And he was told that, yes, this is, everybody heard about Naomi returning with this Moyavi woman who had become a convert, and this is that woman. Now, we already discussed last week that actually Boaz knew about Naomi coming back and how needy she was, and he was a very wealthy man. Why didn't he support her? So one of the understandings we saw was that Boaz respected Naomi's desire not to become dependent. Like, she didn't want to fall on her relatives. And even though he wanted to help her out, he kept the distance and kind of watched from afar to see what would happen. So here, Boaz feels like he hit the jackpot. All of a sudden, Ruth is now collecting in his field. So here's where we'll pick it up. We'll pick it up from Pasuk Ches. Again, if you don't have the Sefer, you'll be just fine. So Vayemer Boaz el Rus. So Boaz says to Rus, Hare Shamat Biti. Look, you've seen the way you were welcomed here. Al Telchi L'Koit B'Sodeach. Don't go to collect anywhere else. Gam Le'Tavuri Mizeh. Don't depart. L'Choy Sid Vokinim Na'ar Isayah. Meaning, the way the Malbim puts it down, is that up till now, he was kind of like refraining from helping out because he wanted to respect her dignity. But now that Ruth is in his field, so he says, okay, you know, you just stay here. I'm not going to come and offer you contributions. I'm going to maintain the distance. But do your collecting here. And then, as we'll see, he'll already make it work. So now, he continues, and he says, I'll read it inside, but he says, go anywhere you want in the field. And not only that, you have the food and drink that they had available for the workers, right? The poor, they could come to collect, but they can't go to take from the workers' provisions. All the food and the drink of the workers is at your disposal. You can go drink from the water that they draw. And Ruth is very surprised at this whole warm welcome to a stranger from an old revered sage who's like the Baal Bais of this old field. So Vatipa Panel, she fell on her face and she says, Why are you showing me all this favor? And he answers her. Let's note Boaz's answer in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayan Boaz Vayemelo. So Boaz said to her, Hu gained hu gadli kol asher asisis chamoseich achrei mois ishech. I heard about everything that you did for your mother-in-law after your husband died. You left your father and mother, and your habitat, your homeland. And you went to join a nation that you never knew. So if you remember, we already stressed, and this is being now without a pasuk, is bringing it out again, that what was motivating Rus? Was it a story of chesed? It's one of the reasons that it says why we read Rus on Shavuos, because of her care for Nami. The Torah is Chilosei Chesed, the Sofei Chesed, her care for Nami. But on the other hand, we also talk about Rus as the ultimate example of a person who came to accept the Torah, as a person who came to join the Shechidah. Which was it? And here we keep seeing, alluded in the Psukim, that she had two tracks motivating her. First of all, her connection to Nami, her loyalty to Nami. So now that Nami is in this sorry state, I'm going to stay there and care for her. So chesed was one agenda that would have been enough to motivate her to do everything she did. And that's why he's saying, first of all, he says, I heard, I heard everything you did for your mother-in-law. And that's already enough to arouse our admiration. Besides that, he says, the other track, you left your home in order to join a foreign nation. In other words, it was her seeking for the MS, her bikusha MS, her desire to get close with Hashem. These were two separate tracks. She was being motivated by both. And this is what we keep seeing. So he tells her as follows. So he says, Yishalem Hashem polech, may Hashem pay you for your actions. And may you receive full reward from Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Asher Boslach Asoy Tachas Knofam, the one whom you have come to take shelter under his wings. So let's note this also. All of Boaz's words need to be learned up. So he tells her a double expression. May Hashem pay you for your actions, and may you receive full reward. What are these two expressions? So the Mefarshim bring out, they say there were two points being made. And this is something for all of us to bear in mind. Person can be paid for his actions. I mean, any action you do, we'll call it a price list. Okay, this is worth this amount. But then there's a maskurtech, modern Hebrew, maskurtech means a salary. It means that you're in someone's employ. I'm not necessarily paying you for, you come to the office from 9 to 5. I'm not going to, it's not working in a way of what are the tasks you did. But for coming to the office from 9 to 5, this is the salary that you get. So what Boaz is telling you is that first of all, you're going to be rewarded for all the actions you did. But besides that, you are now kiviyachol, on Hashem's payroll. Meaning, it's not just that you're getting rewarded for the actions, but you committed your life to Him. Now that you committed your life to Him, so you've signed the contract, so to speak. You've signed the contract. You're being paid for your time. You put your life at Hashem's disposal. Your commitment, the fact that you decided to commit your life to Hashem, now just earns you, setting aside each of the different actions that you're doing, just that broad schar of, you're in my employ. You might be sleeping right now, but this is the time that you dedicated to me. So the truth is that this is a chashuv point for us to bear in mind. And this is a whole, in case anybody, sometimes I'm concerned, I'm going to make people forget, this is actually a chumis halavoshim. And we spent a lot of time on Shah Avodas Elikim. The theme of Avodas Elikim was for a person to develop the mindset of that my life is committed to Hashem. Not just about what are the right things I should do when they come up, etc. But I live my mind with a mentality of I am at Hashem's disposal. I'm in Hashem's service. And we have to realize that this is what makes the difference between how many mitzvahs do you do throughout the day? If a person is living their life, we're doing mitzvahs throughout the day and you get rewarded for the different mitzvahs that you do, that's great. And don't underestimate the reward for any one specific mitzvah. But yet, it can go so much further. And that is, a person lives with an attitude of, my life is dedicated to Hashem. My life is committed to Hashem. I am a soldier in Hashem's service. Meaning, I don't have my own agendas in life. And when mitzvahs come up, I'll do them. When I have to do something, I'll do it. I have my life, but and I also make religion work in my life. But rather, my life is one lifetime of service of Hashem. When a person is living with that sense, my life is committed to Hashem, I'm at his disposal, then everything in life is included in that. And a person gets rewarded for the time that he sleeps, and a person gets rewarded for the time, you get rewarded for the time that you care for your material affairs, because when you're caring for your material affairs, what are you doing? You're doing upkeep of Hashem's office, right? By exercise and work for parnasa and eat meals and sleep, all of those are not private business, but all those are things that I'm doing to maintain Hashem's business, kiviyachol, because I'm in Hashem's employ. So these are the two points that are being stressed here, that Boaz is noting about Ruth, and she's the ultimate of this, right? She came and said, Zo, I am moving my life from my life as a Moabi princess into Hashem's hands, under Hashem's wings. So therefore, he's stressing both. You're going to be rewarded for every one of your actions. But besides that, you're getting that, kiviyachol, we'll call it that, for Mashal's sake, the payroll salary. So now we move on. Vatoymer, so she listen to how she responds. Vatoymer, emtzochein be'inecho adoni. I'm pleased that I find favor in your eyes. Kinichamtani, you've comforted me. This is more technical. I should say, comforted me in the sense of like, you know, I woke up this morning figuring, okay, every day I have to figure out how I'm bringing food home for myself and for Naomi. But now, like, you've relieved my mind. Now I know where we're going to have food. Okay, fine. And I thank you for speaking so warmly to me. While I am actually not as worthy as any one of your maidservants. Meaning what she's expressing here is something quite amazing. She, when she's coming in and joining the Jewish people, she's looking around at the Jews around her with a sense of awe, These are actually the people that Hashem chose. These are the people who are kiviyachol, the biological family of Hashem. Like these are the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And she looked around at awe, feeling like inadequate, feeling awed at the fact that she is now among these people. That sense of inadequacy was actually that fact that, like, how can I compare to these people is what actually rose her above them. So it actually lifted her up to being on the throne of the Malchus, right, at the top of the Jewish people. It was from that sense of, these are Hashem's people, I can't relate to them with enough awe. And therefore she's telling Boaz, I don't deserve the attention that any one of your maidservants deserves. This is what she's expressing here. So now, okay, he reiterates and tells her, you're going to do your collecting here. The food is at your disposal, meaning besides the kernels, the food for the workers is at your disposal, the water is at your disposal. Stay here. Okay, then Boaz, I'm not reading it inside, Boaz then goes to his workers and tells them also. He says, give her completely free rein. Don't. You know, I guess that the way it worked was you had workers working in the field. They didn't let the poor people go everywhere, right? There's a certain sense of security. This is the areas where you can collect, but keep out of this area. So he tells them she has free reign. She can go wherever she wants. And then he tells them, and also, I know she's only going to be collecting the matanos, right? That's what we said before. She doesn't want to be receiving handouts as a poor woman. She's going to be collecting the matanos that are rightfully coming to the poor. So he tells them, make a point of creating more matanis, drop a little more, forget a little more. He tells them, gamshol tosheilula, right? Leket. That's one of the matanis is the things that the workers drop. So he says, Rabbi, I'd like your hands to be a little more clumsy now. You know, shake a little bit, drop more kernels, forget more things in the field, so that she'll have more available. Okay. Fine, so she comes home after a very successful day's yield. She comes in, and her mother-in-law sees her not only bringing home kernels, which was expected, and not only a lot of them, But she even comes home carrying leftover bread that she had eaten with the meals with the workers. By the way, I'll just note, Bayaz told her, he actually stressed her, Koisit Bokinim Na Oisai. He's kind of helping her learn the ropes. He's inviting her to join his workers. He said, stick with the girls. Right? There were the male workers and there were the female workers. He actually told her, spelled it out to her, with my female workers. Whatever it is, she ate with them. She comes home with bread. Now, that's already surprising. She wasn't expected to come home with bread from a day of picking kernels in the field. So her mother-in-law asks her, what's this? Where did you do all this picking? So she answers her. She says, "Vatayma, shema isha shehosisi mayim Bayaz. The field that I came to today belongs to a man named Bayaz." She doesn't know the connection. She doesn't realize that there was actually something very profound going on in terms of the family. So Nami tells her, he is actually our relative. And this is Hashem showing us that we have a future. We're already starting to see our future being outlined for us. So she says, so first thing Naomi says is, wow, that's very amazing. The very fact that you came to Boaz's field is already a sign that Hashem hasn't forgotten about us and that he has a plan for us and that he's going to take care. Now Naomi already is expressing what her thoughts are. He's going to take care not only of me and you, but she says, the way she says it is, Hashem has not forsaken the alive nor the dead. Let's note that right for a moment. We'll get back to it. Whatever the case is, she already sees the yad of Hashgacha setting things up for them. So Rus responded and said, it's not just that I happened to come into this field. He already addressed me. He already invited me to stay with the workers and offered me his food. And that's what happened. She kept on collecting in his field. Now, Naomi already gave away her thoughts. She has a plan here. When she said, oh, look, Hashem is not forsaking his kindness with the live or with the dead. What do you mean by the dead?
Her sons.
So meaning Naomi already, as soon as she heard that, she said, okay, this is not just about Bayaz caring for us, but it's about the continuation of my children. Now we know that there's the mitzvah of Yibum, right? Mitzvah of Yibum dictates that if a person dies childless, chas v'shalom, so his wife then marries his brother, and that's actually considered to be granting a continued life to the dead brother. And it's as though the dead brother now has the opportunity to continue a lineage through his brother marrying his wife. Now here, there wasn't going to be real Yibum. Let's note that. We're not talking about real Yibum here because there were no brothers. There were no surviving brothers. But, and this we see in the Ramban, Yibum in concept did apply. Meaning the Torah, there's a general concept, a general spiritual reality that someone in the family then taking the widow and continuing life with her carries on the dead man's spiritual existence. Now, the highest form that the Torah actually formalizes as a mitzvah is that it be done with the brother. Now, this wasn't going to happen, but if we'll call it the next level, it's not really a mitzvah, but it still fulfills the concept, is for a different relative to do it. Question.
Sorry, completely different. I mean, it's the same subject, but nothing to do. It always bothered me that the brother takes on his brother's legacy, and where's his? I mean, it doesn't apply in Boaz's case because he already had children. But if a fellow is unmarried, and that's the case, he needs to do Yibum or Kulitz or whatever it might be, then how can he take on his brother's legacy? What happens to his elder?
Okay, good question.
Does it still apply today? Can a person get out of it?
What's that?
Can a person get out of it? What's the word if it's one married?
Oh, definitely. The Torah provides two options. There's the option of doing it, of Yibum, and then there's the option of Chalitza. Meaning, if should they decide not to, then there's the process that they go through, and that's done today. Today Yibum is not practiced. For various reasons, Chalitza has to be, because the woman is not permitted out until she does one or the other. The chalitza does happen, unfortunately, when it has to happen, but it's practiced. It's an existing process in Beis Din.
Okay.
So now the question that's being raised is on the whole concept. You're asking another family member to step in and say, I'm going to volunteer to just continue my dead relative's legacy. So, you know what? This is already our last week. We're not going to get all the way till the end. And would have thought we would. But if we'll skip to the end for a moment. When Boaz marries Ruth, I assume we all know, at least in a general way, how the story ends, right? Especially since we're not going to see it. People are going to be left hanging and what ended up happening. So yeah, Boaz ends up marrying Ruth. And they end up becoming the ancestors of David HaMelech. Ruth becomes what we call Ima Shel Malchus. It was saying, it's fine that we spent our time, instead of getting to the climax, just focusing on the story of Ruth herself, learning about her greatness. That's fine. But ultimately, you know, she came from being this Moabi woman who couldn't believe, felt completely inadequate being around other Jewish girls. She ends up on the seat, on the throne of Jewish Malchus, according to some Midrashim. She actually lived to see it, and she had a throne next to Shlomo HaMelech. She was his great-great-grandmother, something like that. And she actually outlived a number of her children. She actually sat on a throne next to Shlomo HaMelech in his throne. But whatever the case is, I want to skip in order to address your question. At the end, when Boaz marries Ruth, so the elders give him a bracha. And, sorry, the bracha that they say is the following. It's a long bracha. I'm reading one part of it. Yibeis chok beis peretz asher yolda tamar liyehuda. Min hazera sheyiten Hashem lecha min hanar hazois. May your home be like the house of Peretz that Tamar bore to Yehuda, from the seed that Hashem will grant you from this woman. That was a very great bracha. Why? Because Peretz was the most aristocratic family in Klal Yisrael, and they knew that the kings would be coming from there. They knew that that was going to be this was the most aristocratic family in Yehuda, right? Who was the Melech of Klal Yisrael. They're telling you, your family should continue that greatness, that prestige. But the Mefarshim note something. Peretz, who was the son of Yehuda and who fathered the Malchus, where did he come from? What? Tamar, in what kind of marriage? Another Yibo marriage, right? What they're actually bringing out is Mamish addressing your point. In that case also, what Yehuda actually did unwittingly, and again, this was before Matan Torah, as we said, the concept of Yibum can apply to anyone in the family. Now, after Matan Torah, a father-in-law is not allowed to marry a daughter-in-law. But this was before Matan Torah. His children had died. He unwittingly, but Hashem set it up such that he would actually be marrying his deceased child's wife and perpetuating their legacy. But what ends up? What ends up is that, on the contrary, it's true. On the surface, it looks like, and the truth is that's why, if you remember, the first one to ask you a question was Tamar's second husband. She was first married to Yehuda's son, Er, her eldest son. He died childless. Oinon had problems with the understanding that he now is giving up his own place in history to provide for Er, right? And therefore, he didn't really cooperate with the plan, and he also was put to death. And then Yehuda ended up marrying her. And he ended up doing this job. Mamish filling in for his son, right? He's like, for his son. This is even more like a mailer for a brother, like for his son. But what ends up happening? This is what actually, kiviyachol, so to speak, gives Yehuda his claim to fame. That's right. He gave up on his own immediate like place in the family, but that ended up bringing him to an even higher place. The point being, you know, sometimes it looks like I'm giving up on my identity for another person, giving up on so much for another person. Actually, it's bringing you to a higher place and bringing out a lot more of yourself. The self that was willing to give up self for the other person is a much greater self than the self who perpetuated his own legacy. Is that a little too complicated? Or
no, that makes sense. With me on that? But on the other hand, is that the goal of Yibo? To make the person a greater person within himself.
It always is.
Or is what we learn is that the point of Yibum is to perpetuate his brother's Like I said, so it's not really answering the question. It might be very nice that he's becoming a better person.
It does. And it answers the question. I'll explain why. And the truth is, okay, you know, we're digressing here, but it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile because this actually is a fundamental point to bring out in its own right. It's a big subject, and I'm going to try to bring it in briefly. The goal is to perpetuate the other person, okay? Let me ask the question a little differently. I'm going to ask it in a way that's more relevant to us. We talk about the greatness of raising a Jewish family, raising children to become Ovdei Hashem, okay? Bringing more people into Hashem's service. So if you think about it for a minute, I'm going to be a little blunt here and talk in like blunt terms. So, you know, we're encouraged to try to have many children. Hashem has this plan for each person as it actually works. So what happens? So I decide I'm having 23 children. You know what then the parents' life ends up looking like? Right? They become very, very, it's a very, you might argue, when do they ever have time for their own growth? Right? When do they ever have time for their own growth? They're giving up their whole growth in order to huff and puff and puff and keep up with raising a family. And then what do you tell all those children? Go do the same thing. Okay? And they all go, so where's the growth actually happening? Right? Everyone's being told, produce more children so that, you know, they can be more Ovdei Hashem. They're all just sacrificing any of their own opportunities for growth to raise more children. What's the answer? The answer is that on the contrary, that is exactly where the growth is. And that's really a big subject that has to be spelled out in full detail. But yes, when we say, you give up your own identity for the other person, we usually don't say that, by the way. But the any time we talk about an objective goal, you do this so that you do chesed for that person. On the surface level, the goal is that person, but really, it's you. Meaning as follows. Let's ask a simple question. You know what? There are a lot of needy people around us. A lot of needy people around us, and it's our job to try to care for them in whatever way we can. Sometimes it's with money, sometimes it's with help, sometimes it's with emotional support, sometimes it's with all of the above, sometimes it's other things, right? So what's the goal? The goal is there are needy people, they need care. Let's ask a simple question. Why didn't Hashem take care of them? This question was actually asked. A Roman governor asked this to Rabbi Akiva. You say that your Hashem loves the needy, so why doesn't he care for them? And Rabbi Akiva's answer was, I'm going to say his answer in a roundabout way. And I'm going to give a mashal. And Mom, you'll appreciate this. My father, I probably said this here a few times. That's right. The sukkah, that's right. My father used to tell us, my father's a very capable man. And before sukkahs, we would go out to help him with the sukkah, he would say, he would tell us, if I do it myself, it'll take an hour. If you help me, it'll take three, right? But then he would encourage us to help him. So basically, you know, you have a poor person here, and Hashem is basically telling us exactly the same thing. So let me ask a question. Why do you have us help him? You should have told us to stay home. No, he wanted us to be involved. We wanted to be doing it with us. He wanted us to be doing it with him. That was the end goal, really, right? So when Hashem comes and says, I want you to care for the poor, he's telling us exactly the same thing. He's telling him, Rabbi, I can care for the poor much better than you can. You're going to do a limping job. You'll do it partially, etc. But you know what? This is your chance to be involved with me. This is your chance to be a part of the family business. What's Hashem's business? Hashem's business is one great big chesed enterprise. And he says, I want you to be a part of that. And therefore, I'm holding back. I could do the job much better myself. But I'm holding back. I'm making this person needy and that person needy and that person needy in order to give you a chance to make yourself that much bigger, to make yourself like me by helping that person out. So on the one hand, we come and say, it's about the other person. That should be your mindset. It's about the other person. He needs help, etc. Put yourself aside and help the other person. But Hashem never really tells us to put yourself aside. Never. Whenever we talk about sacrificing for this and sacrificing for that, it's all about use that to make yourself that much bigger. A neshama is not a disposable. A neshama is something that is very, very immense, and any circumstance that Hashem puts you into, anything it seems like I'm giving up of, and if it really is giving up of yourself, you shouldn't do it. Now that's that. Don't just take that as a rule to run with. I'm talking conceptually now. But the idea is always, when I'm talking about giving up of yourself, it's in order to bring out an even greater self. So yes, when we talk about Yibum, it's true. On the one hand, it's another form of chesed like any other form of chesed. When I tell you, give up your money to help that person, I'm telling you, give up an important part of your life in order to bring your life to an even greater place. So when I tell you, give up what seems to be your own legacy for the other person, what I'm actually saying is, put yourself in an even greater place, and then that legacy is going to be an even greater accomplishment for you than what you would have called your own legacy. So it really is the answer to the question. Anytime I'm told to do something for another person, the ultimate goal really is myself. That's how it works in Avodas Hashem. For example, just to bring out this point from another angle, this is something that I believe was Reb Moshe Shapira, who there was a big askin, a big chesed activist, who is busy 24/7 helping people, basically. And I think it was Reb Moshe Shapira, I'm not sure, making that clear, I'm not sure, who insisted, who was nudging him that he has to take out some time for learning, whatever, like a certain amount of time. And he told him, well, I'm busy with chesed the whole time. So he said, it's not just about the chesed. Who's doing the chesed is also a very important part of the equation. Ultimately, it's about making you bigger. And that might sound like we're turning it all around, making it from selfless to selfish. In a way, it is. In a way, it is. You have to realize that, like we said before, a neshama is not a disposable. It's about making your neshama as great as it can be. And Hashem does not want you to sacrifice your neshama for anything. Anytime we talk about sacrifice, it's sacrificing something that is for a higher purpose for your neshama. It's bringing your neshama to an even greater level. So anytime we talk about doing something for some other goal, about putting yourself aside, ultimately, what that really gets you to is putting yourself into an even higher, greater place. So again, if that sounds self-centered, sorry, but it boils back down to the fact that let's not take lightly what an neshama really means. And there really never is such a thing for a person to really be sacrificing his own neshama for something else. It's always about, if the Torah calls for sacrifice, it's always about you sacrifice one level in order to gain an even higher level. So yes, this was a digression, but it was actually a very fitting digression because that actually is very, very much the theme of everything we're learning here. That's what Ruth did when she married Boaz. Ruth did exactly the same thing, and Boaz tells her that. Boaz tells her, I'm not going to find it right now, but she theoretically should have been looking to start like he was a very old man. His wife had just been nifter. What? Yud Gimel. Okay, I guess I'm too flustered to find it. But he actually tells her theoretically he was a very old man. His wife had just been nifter. He lived a ripe old life. He had many children, right? And she's young. She should have been starting out life. Find the shidduch. Okay, she was in a little bit of a compromised state. Fine. But she can find a shidduch that's more appropriate for her. She's going to marry somebody. She knows she's going to be a widow in a very short time after everything she's already been through, right? And he tells her, he makes that very same point to her. She forfeited her own future to marry him, to do this chesed for her husband, etc. Did she really forfeit? Or did she put herself into a much, much, much greater place for all of posterity? Did she forfeit by giving up on her family and becoming Rus for all of history? Find other such instances where we're looking at it at face value. It's like the person just set aside their own identity. But actually you see that it emblazoned them in a much higher place in terms of who they themselves were. So I hope that that's clear enough. And Adarabba, if this is how we end this round on Rus, it's worthwhile. You should be zeichet to take that example, see what it means to be a true Eved Hashem, that Hashem draws close on the individual level, approach Kabbalah Satira in that way. Yom Tov.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good
Yom Tov. Thank you.
Have a good Yom Tov.
Shikar, thank you. A good Yom Tov.
Let me ask you a question.
Please, I'm just going to end the.